Contest of Champions, episode number 21, Professor X versus Venom.
Let's get ready to rumble! Contest of Champions.
Welcome back, comic book fans of all shapes and sizes, to the second exciting season of Contest of Champions Live. We are excited to welcome back both listeners and competitors to this, the premier online comic book game of the century. Returning for a second season of COC Live Action is the Canadian Cape Killer, Mr. Ian Johnson. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you?
I'm just fine. I'm excellent. I'm very excited about our first fight for the night. And also with us, I forgot to mention that I'm here, the clobbering clergyman, Jeff Jackson. and with us also are our competitors, Mr. Tom McNeely.
Hi, everybody.
And the rookie sensation, Daniel Fabrizio.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Dan.
It's good to have you guys here. Do you guys, Tom, you know, why don't you give us a little, for the new listeners, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I'm a longtime competitor in the COC games. I've been going since, was it the first or second one? And back on the old site, and been collecting comics since I was a little kid. In fact, I've learned to read from comics. So nice. I've been reading and collecting for, gosh, I don't even want to say how many years. But anyway, I tend to favor DC characters to Ian's chagrin. But I still read both Marvel and DC. And actually, though, I'm kind of handicapped in the Marvel games because I have spent several years on the road, so I end up building up a huge backlog, and so I'm actually somewhere around 4 years behind. I'm just now getting to where I'm almost ready to read Secret Invasion. That's how far behind I am. So a lot of my stuff I get either from just following along in previews or you know, through the wikis and so on, and keeping up with what current events are going on versus actual readings in some cases. So anyway, that's it makes it a little bit interesting.
That's sad that you could follow along current continuity just by reading previews.
side discussion, so yeah. I have a good time with it.
Well, good. Well, we're glad to have you. And Daniel, tell us a little bit about you.
Not much to tell. I live out in the good old Sunshine State, Southern California. Two weeks ago, I picked up my favorite run in all of comics in an omnibus form. The Age of Apocalypse came out.
Oh, nice.
That was actually what first got me into comics back when I was, I want to say, 9 years old. So 85, yeah, 94.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Mainly, I stick to the X-Men and Deadpool. I guess you could consider him an X-Men. I don't really know anymore.
I would consider him that.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I read. I have a lot of things. I follow a lot of different writers as well. Brubaker, Fraction.
Ooh.
let me clarify that. Fraction's Iron Fist.
Oh, okay. Oh, there you go. That's better. Well, cool. Well, Ian, do we have some news for the week?
Yeah. So before tonight's fight, let's take a minute. We'll talk about some of the biggest news in the world of funny books this week. The first thing I wanted to mention was the passing of a man, Ralph McQuarrie, who's the man who was credited with bringing director George Lucas's vision for Star Wars to the big screen. He died at the age of 82. And shortly after his death, Twitter completely lit up with tweets from different comic book creators around the world, all crediting McQuarrie as their inspiration to create fictional characters and stories. So a sad passing of someone who, you know, helped uh, helped create one of the greatest things from my childhood, which is Star Wars. And Lucas goes on to give a ton of credit to McQuarrie to helping bring vision to all of his ideas and pictures to all of his ideas.
I love looking at those old paintings of his and like the original, like C-3PO and R2-D2 and the, you know, the old, like the Imperial Walkers and those kind of things. Like it's just amazing how much, I mean, we have all these visual images of what Star Wars is. I mean, you say Star Wars and you think of all these visual images. And this is the guy who was the creator of all those. I mean, he put all of that stuff that was in George Lucas's head and created a masterpiece out of it. So yeah, he will be missed, definitely.
For sure. And then on another sad note, Hall of Fame comic artist Sheldon Moldoff passed away on Wednesday at the age of 91 due to kidney failure. Sheldon's art was featured inside of and on the cover of some of the most influential books that have ever been made. He showcased art inside of Action Comics number one. He drew the cover of Flash number one and introduced the original Green Lantern on the cover of All-American Comics number 16. Interestingly enough, it's also claimed that Shelley Moldoff was the ghost artist for Bob Kane between 53 and 1967, drawing some of the material that Kane took credit for. Kane was the last surviving creator who had worked on Action Comics number one.
You mean Moldoff?
Moldoff. Sorry. Who worked on Action Comics?
There he is again. Kane taking credit for somebody else's stuff.
Yeah.
That's a long time to be a ghost artist for somebody else.
Yeah. And you don't even hear about that anymore, really. Do you know what I mean? The ghost artist, like now everybody gets their credits for everything.
I mean, a ghost artist would be ridiculed today. Tom, you're a Golden Age fan. Did you hear about Shelley Moldoff?
I'm sorry, on your meet. No, actually I hadn't. So thanks for sharing that. I hadn't heard that, but yeah, he's definitely a name that I've heard of. And he was one of the greats.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, we're having fewer and fewer Golden Age artists and writers still with us, and it's sad, but it's has been 75 years now. So,
golly, yeah. That's crazy.
And then what I'll do is I'll end it on a more positive note. The last thing I want to talk about was iTunes reported that the Avengers trailer broke all records for viewing after being viewed by more than 13.7 million. After being viewed more than 13.7 million times after the first 24 hours of its debut, which is, you know, pretty amazing when you think about how hard it was to get any kind of publicity for comics when we were growing up. And now you got this trailer, this, you know, like 90-second trailer or whatever it was, that's viewed almost 14 million times in 24 hours.
Dude, go ahead.
It's a good trailer, though.
Oh, it's an awesome trailer.
Yeah. I just hope that's not all the best stuff.
Nah, I'm sure it's got more stuff, but
that Hulk catch was awesome.
Hulk catch? Yes. I love that.
Iron Man zooming through the streets of Manhattan with his right before that. That was also really good.
Yeah.
It's obviously going to have some more good stuff because they didn't show enough Hawkeye.
Oh. You know, I noticed that he was the one character, the one Avenger character who did not get a line in the trailer. So everyone else had a line, but poor Jeremy Renner.
That's because he's too cool for lines.
All right. Yeah, I'm so pumped about that. We should do like a, I don't know. We should figure out how to do like a live broadcast of all of us going to see Avengers at the same time and get our reactions. I'm so pumped about that movie.
Yeah,
a simulcast that would be fun.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we could do that, but still, it's good stuff. Well, for those of you who are new to the COC, this is a game that we've been playing for about 5 years. I can't believe it's been 5 years. In which comic book enthusiasts like Tom and Daniel argue over who could beat up who in a fight. in the world of comics. Adhering this game, we're adhering to an Iron Man cap, power cap. The five competitors drafted five characters, and you can go back and listen to last week's episode to hear those. And basically their job is to convince Ian and me and you listeners out there that their characters are the toughest in any given situation. If you happen to miss out on the live draft, you can go to comicattack.former.com, which is our forums for comicattack.net, and you can look it up on the forum that is for the COC podcast. So you can go there and keep up all week with our discussion and keep up with us individually on all things COC.
Good. So tonight's fight features Professor Xavier, who's managed by the wily veteran Tom McNeely, versus Venom, who's going to be managed by a newcomer to the world of COC. That's Daniel Fabrizio. Dan was scheduled as the home team and determined that tonight's fight is going to take place on the Sword Space Headquarters, otherwise known as the Peak Station. Listen carefully to the podcast, as all of our voting rules and game information is listed after the fight. But before the fight, it's tradition here on COC Live for all the participants and Jeff and myself to choose one fight from this week in comics that we consider to be the highlight fight of the week. So Jeff, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I will. So my fight of the week is from The Walking Dead number 94. And if you've been keeping up with this current storyline, the survivors have come across a new survivor by the name of Jesus, or Jesus. I don't know really how that's supposed to be pronounced. I'm thinking Jesus, because he looks kind of like Jesus. But this Jesus character has come on and has said that there are other communities like theirs, and they'd like to set up a trade system between these two communities of survivors. And so, but because of all of the history of Rick and everybody just being screwed by other survivors, of course they don't trust this guy. So they tied him up, and they've been keeping him. Well, in this issue, they decided to move or basically take – they decided that he's not leading a group of people to attack the community that they're in. So they decided to go to his community to find out if what he's really saying is really true. And so but they've still got this guy – tied up in the back of their van, and so they're going to this place, and then they stop for the night, and of course they get attacked by a herd of zombies, and this guy Jesus like jumps out of the back of the van, and he's tied up behind with his hands behind his back, and he just starts going like jump kicking people and drop kicking them left and right like the zombies, and just he's just like this awesome fighter, and so he just starts taking out people with his hands tied behind his back, and then later in the issue you find out that he really could have untied himself the entire time, but was trying to gain the trust of the group. So anyway, I just thought it was awesome. He just jumps out of the van and just starts kicking people, and Rick actually thinks that he's like running away, but in fact he's actually trying to help, and so he just completely kicks some zombie ass, and it's pretty awesome. So that's mine.
Good. Yeah, that was a good fight. That character's interesting.
Yeah, I think so. I'm excited to see where this is going. So, Yeah.
I don't think it's going to turn out as good as it sounds. Like, and I don't mean from a writing standpoint, but I think that they're really leading these guys down the primrose path.
Oh yeah, that's how it always is. Yeah. So, something's got to go wrong, or the series is going to suck. So,
yeah. All right, Daniel, do you have a fight for us?
It's actually a relatively small week for me in comics, for some weird reason. I guess it's that fifth week of the month. My fight is actually not really a fight yet. It's Venom number 13.4, where basically each individual character, X-23, Ghost Rider, Venom, and Red Hulk,
are fighting their antithesis and end up dying. And when they come back as one huge entity, which is the Venom Rock Rider. Which to me is just like awesome, just seeing him Red Hulk with the Venom suit on with the Ghost Rider head. It was just amazing. I'm so amped for the conclusion to it.
It's nice to have that kind of mashup.
Well, I think that they're able to do a lot more with Red Hulk in the terms of like getting him different powers than Banner, so I'm kind of excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool.
All right, Tom, how about you, Tom?
Okay, I was kind of torn this week. I actually ran into several good battles. I was torn between the Teen Titans, where Superboy beats up the whole team single-handedly, and I finally settled, though, on Justice League numbers 4 and 5. And this is where Aquaman joins the group. This is all set, of course, 5 years in the past. This is the official launch of the New 52 in DC. So anyway, has Aquaman introducing himself to the group. And I love how Geoff Johns keeps going off on like tracking Aquaman jokes and then turning around and reestablishing him as a real tough character now in the new continuity. So when he shows up, Batman introduces and says they call him Aquaman, and then Green Lantern's response is Aquaman. I thought Aquaman was a sketch on Conan O'Brien, and so and he keeps calling him Aquafresh, and then but then it turns around, Parademons attack. Aquaman's up calling up great white sharks to leap up out of the bay and just chomp down on all the Parademons flying over, and then one last one gets through and he takes it out with his trident through the head. So just goes to show, you know, he always turns the tables. So he cracks some Aquaman jokes and then turns around and has him just kick butt. And then it goes on. Cyborg ends up also activating a boom tube and showing up with the rest of the team. And then now the whole team's finally together. And then a boom tube opens up and out walks Darkseid. And it looks like they're making him into a much tougher character than, Darkseid's kind of has highs and lows over the years. It looks like they're bringing him out as being, you know, just a really top bad guy in DC now. He basically comes out, knocks back all the leaguers, and then he goes on into issue 5, where he just immediately lets go with the mega beams after Flash and Superman. And Flash outruns his beam for a while, and manages to vibrate through a parademon to knock him out, while the other beam, Superman, tries to fly away and outrun it and ends up nailing him. And you see the beam just slash right through him. And then parademon flies off with him. So meanwhile, the rest of the leaguers group to attack. Green Lantern hits him with a power ring construct and just breaks off. It just his dark side and shatters. And then Darkseid ends up punching Green Lantern, punches right through his shields, and then snaps his arm in half. Ouch. And meanwhile the rest of them are pretty ineffectual against him. So it ends up being Batman finally takes off his cowl and his chest emblem and hijacks the parademon and back through a boom tube into Apocalypse, and the rest of the leaguers are taking off to try to stop some of the chaos. So
Batman is the one who stops him?
No, it doesn't stop him. Darkseid's nobody stops him. Batman goes after Superman. So he follows he hijacks a parademon and ends up the last scene of issue 5 is him looking over Apocalypse, and this isn't what I expected.
Right.
So it's finally building. I've been just some of the team books seem to have had a slow build-up. Teen Titans and Justice League both have had, you know, relatively slow development into the actual team, whereas, say, Stormwatch start out with the team, and then they're now disassembling them into a new and reconstructing the team dynamic. So it's very different how they're doing it. But the two League books, Justice League and Teen Titans, have both been very slow to bring the teams together, whereas, like, Justice League International and Stormwatch have both just start out with the team and just kind of thrown them together to begin with.
All right.
Good stuff. I love Aquaman.
Oh, come on. God, you're such a traitor.
If you read the book, you know what I mean.
I did read an issue of the book, and it was horrible.
Well, that's not ready. Yeah. Okay.
You talk about the new one?
Yes, I did. I read it for The Water Cooler, and it was the one where he was in the desert, and it was not very good.
That was the worst one so far.
Of course it was. Of course.
I did like where he launches telepathy out and ends up drawing in the lizard.
Yeah.
All right, so for my fight of the week, I took mine from New Avengers number 22, one of my favorite books every month, New Avengers. Some great art by Diodato. I think I'm saying his name right. And my fight of the week is actually, it's not even a real fight. It all ends up happening just inside her head, but you don't know that till the end. And it revolves around Victoria Hand, who is Norman Osborn's old lackey from his Hammer days. And, well, I guess he's back into his Hammer days now, but from his old Hammer days. And everyone on the New Avengers is sure that she's a traitor and can't understand why Steve Rogers placed her with the New Avengers. So it starts off where Wolverine comes knocking on her door because they're pretty sure that she's sold them out to Norman Osborn, and he's got his claws out and he's ready to slice and dice Hand. And then he says to her, you know what I hate more than anything in the world is hitting a dame. And then she goes on about how that's good. But then Mockingbird jumps over his shoulder. You couldn't even see her there. And just jacks her one right in the jaw, throwing her across the room. And then Daredevil and Iron Fist and all these guys enter the room, and they're all saying, you know, just tell us the truth. And then she keeps going, saying, I have no idea what you're talking about. And Daredevil says, okay, toss her. And they throw her out the window. And she's, I don't know, about 10, 12 stories up. And she comes flying through the air and crashes down on, you know, the classic middle of the car kind of crash down scene. And then that's when they go to Doctor Strange's sanctorum or whatever it's called, and they show that she's actually just under this death spell, and they're trying to scare her into telling the truth. But it was cool little scene. Maybe not as good as the fight on the very last page of the book, but I won't tell anybody that because that's a super huge spoiler, especially if you're a Scar fan.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's my fight of the week. Great book. Always good fights in New Avengers.
Yeah, actually, Will Conrad provided some pencils for that too, along with Mike Diodato. And he's fantastic. He's done some stuff with X-Men and just really good artist. So
he does a nice job with Luke Cage. I love his Luke Cages, the way he draws Luke.
Yeah.
He makes him real scary looking, like just beastly.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, thank you guys for all of those. Be sure to pick up those books where you can because they're all excellent. And now on to the main event. It's important for listeners and managers to understand the circumstances under which the fighters are competing, especially because this is their first fight of the new season. So the fighters are, we can imagine that they're being teleported to this location. But they're on opposite ends of the environment. And the fighters have full disposal of any and all the resources available in the environment. Fighters are not allowed to leave the environment, but teleportation and flyers are not considered as leaving the environment. I mean, unless you can't teleport your opponent just away and let that be the win, you know? Like, it has to happen within the environment for their flying or their teleporting to work. And lastly, yeah,
and teleporting has to be within the environment. You can't, like, teleport to Avengers headquarters or Fantastic Four headquarters and grab the Ultimate Nullifier and come back and win.
Right, that's what I mean, right? Go ahead.
You have to be careful with that because it wasn't too long ago where they confirmed that pretty much anybody who teleports actually leaves the Marvel 616 dimension and travels through like the dark dimension or something like that. And that's how they have their teleportation powers. Because I remember one COC a long, long time ago. I don't know if you remember, Jeff, somebody tried to say that every time that that character teleported, they were fleeing. They're leaving 616 because when they teleport, they're in the dark dimension or whatever like that. That is not fleeing. That's part of their power set. So that's that is not fleeing.
Right.
Right.
Sorry, I just thought I'd bring that up.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And finally, the winner has to be determined based on the fact that he or she has subdued the opponent's fighter. And so subduing, our definition of subduing is anything from restraining them so that they cannot move or fight back, or just straight up killing, depending on who the character is, I guess. So so that's kind of the ground rules with which we're kind of basing these fights on. So.
All right, good. So time for the traditional coin toss. I was going to do something crazy for our coin toss.
I love the coin toss.
This year, but I couldn't think of anything nuts. So I just went right back to the old coin toss.
That's okay.
Hope you don't mind. No surprises. But I thought I'd start us off with our favorite, which is the Canadian nickel. And Tom, you're the one who's going to call it. And the nickel, for our American listeners that don't know what the Canadian nickel looks like, there's a beaver on one side and the queen on the other.
It's like the perfect coin.
Yeah, yeah. It's true. So, Tom, what do you want? You want the beaver or the queen?
I'll go for the beaver.
The beaver, all right.
Of course
here we
you
go.
Will. Of course you do.
Yeah. yeah, beaver it is. So, Tom, do you want to say your rationale first, or do you want Daniel to go first?
I'll let Daniel go first.
All right. It's all in your court now, Daniel.
Okay. So, just so I'm understanding this right, they're teleported on opposite ends. They have full access to anything that's in the environment, correct?
Correct.
That's correct.
Okay. This is the other thing that I was kind of curious on. Would he know that who he's fighting?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, oh, they're aware of their opponent.
They're aware of their opponent. That's what I was kind of confused on.
Oh, so okay. Jeff, you're saying they're aware of their opponent, Jeff?
Well, I just assume that. But what do you think?
Well, I always assumed that it was like the original Contest of Champions, where there's like a room full of people, and then they just teleport them in, and you don't know who's going to be there, and you know what I mean? Like,
they don't know ahead of time. No, it's always been that. I mean, like if they teleport into the middle of an Avengers meeting, you'd have to know who you're actually fighting.
Okay.
But the thing is, it'd be like you appear, you know where you are and who you need to defeat. But aside from that, you haven't had time to prepare or anything like that.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. In that sense, yes. You're right. Because they don't know ahead of time. You're right.
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure on that one.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. So Venom, being the military Venom now, Flash Thompson, the first thing he would do is protect his weaknesses, being fire and sound waves. Seeing how this is an alien headquarters, he's going to be able to find at least something to protect one of them, more than likely a sound wave. He's also been infused with spider powers, so he has a spidey sense now. So Professor X wouldn't be able to sneak up on him. Which I don't know how he could sneak up on him anyway. Professor X would be fighting not just the man himself, but he would also be fighting the symbiote. And the symbiote isn't an intelligent creature in the fact that it can't like think for itself. Whenever it's the symbiote itself, it only has a natural reaction to survive. And even if for some reason Professor X can get into Flash's head, what's he going to see? A guy that's prone to being in a wheelchair. That sounds a little bit familiar. So I think that alone would make him more rational with him. Professor X has always been the kind of guy that's willing to understand, whereas if Venom is attacked to the point of certain death, his natural instinct is to survive, whether that's escaping or infusing himself with the nearest, most powerful thing. Even when he would be pushed to his limit, the Venom currently has a thing called a multi-gun that can shift its range from an automatic all the way up to a sniper rifle. He also has a natural camouflage that Professor X wouldn't be able to detect. So he could sit around at the other end of the base, just camouflaged, waiting for him to show up, and then just take the shot. If it came down to the last second, Venom could also bust a hole in the side of the building. Or the headquarters out in space. Venom can survive in space. I don't think Professor X can. Let's see. Venom also has his enhanced strength, so he would be able to rip things up to disturb Professor X's concentration. Professor X, when presented with physical conflict, has not been able to withstand anything. Well, not anything, but he has a lot harder time. I just don't see how Professor X can fight two things at once. One of them is an animal, a sentient one-cell organism that's going to latch itself onto him if it gets the chance. And that's all I got for that.
Okay. That's pretty good. I see it a little bit differently. For one thing, they're starting out on opposite ends of the space station. So that gives Xavier time to make use of the station itself. For one thing, it's a manned station, so he's going to be able to first of all, the easiest solution, and this kind of ends it quickly, but Xavier just basically telepathically shuts down Flash Gordon's, or I keep saying that, Flash Thompson's mind, and shuts the symbiote down, and that ends it right there. I mean, it's he's contained, but there are also several other factors that play in here. If you look back at Thunderbolts 119 and 120, there was a situation where Zrachter Venom joined the Thunderbolts, and there were four psychics that were imprisoned in the mountain, and they ended up, one of them, Blue Streak, ended up taking telepathic control of Venom and sending him on a rampage through Thunderbolt Mountain, and then putting him up against the Swordsman and having the two of them fight it out. So Venom's very susceptible, is susceptible to telepathic control. So that this is against a run-of-the-mill psychic who's a prisoner of the Thunderbolts. So Xavier's not going to have any problem identifying where Venom is in the station, and finding him telepathically and taking control of him or shutting him down. Secondly, the other personnel he can make use of the other personnel on the station to locate where the armory is and where the prisoner cells are. And remember, this is a sword. Is tasked with protecting Earth against alien invasions, and the symbiote is an alien. Therefore, you've got to assume that the defenses of the station are keyed against Venom in particular, because he's well known by the government. So they're obviously going to have countermeasures built into their security systems for Venom. So Xavier will be able to, if Venom starts acting up, since he is an agent of the government, they might tolerate him being on the station, but if he starts tearing things up, they're going to put countermeasures in place. Plus Xavier can provide a telepathic suggestion to the personnel running the defense consoles to go after him. So he can have, so basically the whole station will be attacking Venom. And third, Xavier will know where the armory is and where to lead Venom to imprison him in the cells. So he'll be able to arm himself with weapons, and once again, their armory will have weapons that are good against the symbiote, because there are so many symbiotes now in the Marvel Universe. There's Venom, Carnage, Anti-Venom. I don't even know who all of them are now. But the symbiotes themselves are well known. So he'll be able to get weaponry before Venom's even had a chance to track him down. A couple other things you mentioned, Daniel. One was the spider sense. I was actually working the opposite direction, because I thought you might bring up that Venom is immune to Spider-Man's spider sense. But if you look at the way the spider sense works, it's not exactly telepathic. It's more of a precognition power, because Spider-Man can, if he comes up on a bomb, his fire sense is going to go off, warning him of danger. It's not necessarily a telepathic thing. It's more of knowing that something bad is going to happen in the next few moments if he doesn't react. That's not necessarily a telepathic power. So Venom might be able to detect if Xavier is lying in wait for him, but I don't think he'll actually get to a physical confrontation unless it's Xavier just coming in to put a finishing touch on Venom after taking control of him and shutting him down, or after activating the station's defenses against him. So I see Xavier having several avenues to win. I mean, there's always the strategy we always hate is, oh, Xavier just shuts his mind down before he has time to do anything. That's been a strategy through the ages for CSC of Professor Xavier. I'm trying to make it a little more exciting than just saying he's going to shut him down and we're done.
We appreciate that.
but there were several other options, and I did point out that the space station itself is Earth's last line of defense against alien invasion, and the fact that Venom is a well-known alien means that Sword's definitely going to have countermeasures against Venom all through the station, and Xavier's going to be able to make use of those. And while I don't think Xavier has a really great relationship with Agent Brand, who runs? She still runs Sword, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how good a relationship they have, but she does have two X-Men working with her, Lockheed and Beast, and a relationship with Beast. So I'm sure she would be much more trusting of Xavier versus a guy who's been both villain and hero in the past, and more often not a villain. So in this case, I think the environment is going to work against Venom. And you're right, he could try punching through the walls. But even so, the station is going to be self-sealing. Something that big is not going to just vent itself. So he would have to be in the same room as Xavier. And I don't think that's going to happen until Xavier's not going to show himself to Venom until Venom's already incapacitated. So if you want, do you have anything else you want to bring up, Daniel?
You mentioned Thunderbolts 119. That would have been Mac Gargan.
Yeah.
Mac Gargan wasn't trained by the government to resist psychic probes. The only time recently that Venom's been taken over psychically was by Blackheart, so a mystical. Also, you mentioned Professor X giving a mental suggestion that he needed to take down Venom. I don't think Professor X would have just thrown people right at Venom when he's on a rampage.
No, but he'd let the person at the defense countermeasures console know to activate the internal defenses against Venom. And no, I'm not talking about putting cannon fodder in his way. I'm talking about actually saying off the station defenses. I don't think Sword guards are going to need to get involved here because they're going to have a pretty good handle on how to pin up Venom.
Oh, I'm not doubting that. But as I said, the first thing he would do would be to locate an armory. And also, he's currently an Avenger, which gives him, I won't say some sort of clearance, but the fact that the Secret Avengers are also located in space, I'm sure that Sword is well aware that they are there. And who would have clearance into that?
Good point.
Yeah, he is working for the government now, so that's why I didn't say that the station defense would automatically go off. But I think Xavier's going to have more convincing case that Venom would be on a rampage.
Also, you mentioned Agent Brand. She is currently going out with Beast, correct?
Yeah.
And as far as the last time that Xavier and Beast had a real talk, they weren't on the best of speaking terms. So I think that he would also be looked at as a possible threat as to why he's here all of a sudden, not to mention his relations with the Shi'ar Empire that they have currently just finished a whole war with.
Yeah, but hasn't Xavier pretty much renounced his ties with the Shi'ar since Lalandra's dead?
I don't know if he's renounced all of his ties, but I mean, just his affiliation as well. I mean, they've been a threat to humanity before, so I think that he would always be looked at kind of questionably in space, of all places.
Yeah.
On Earth, probably not so much.
Yeah, but it would come down to, Professor X has been a mentor to Beast for his entire career, so I don't think one spat's really, even if they're not on best of terms now, it's more of a long term. I think Xavier's past relationship and past actions, he's been known more often than not as an aid to the government than an antagonist. Venom is still, I'm not sure there's not a whole lot of trust in there. I don't think, even with Avengers clearance, I don't know that there's the trust is completely there for the Venom. He has worked with Thunderbolts before, and there have been problems. The Avengers have had people like Sandman maybe before that have not been totally trusted. So that, if it came down to question, you have Venom rampaging through there. Xavier is able to, and you never know with Xavier if everything's well, if you see with him, because he can make himself invisible to the people monitoring the security. He can, kind of skulk around a little bit, or he can, provide, basically give, even without taking over people, he can still give you a feeling of, warmth and trust when hit with him and antagonism with Venom. So I think he can easily turn the station to his advantage.
I completely agree with that. The issue that I find is Professor X is going to try to reason with him right off the bat. That's what he's going to do. He would know as soon as he probed into his mind, not to mention this is Venom. He's one of the most well-known villains, that there's a guy under the suit that, he's essentially an American hero, lost his legs in the war. He's going to see that, and he's going to try to reason with him. That's what Professor X does. He doesn't resort to violence till the last possible moment.
Right, and so he's going to be looking for a way to incapacitate him quickly and humanely and prevent him from being a threat. He's not going to just walk up to him and try to reason with him. He'll, if anything, try to reason with him psychically from a distance and slowly, and look for an opening. It's when he does start reasoning with someone, it's usually when there's either when all hope's lost, like when Juggernaut attacks and everybody's lying in defeat and he's the last person, or if they've already got the person pinned up and then he tries to reason with him. He's not usually the one to go on the front lines and start reasoning with the villain or reasoning with his opponent in the middle of a battle. And he's going to, he does know that this is they're not going to be able to walk away from this friends, at least not until a victor is declared. So I don't see him coming out with hands out trying to make peace with Venom. He's going to make sure that he has the upper hand. He's not going to prostrate himself in front of him.
All right.
So, I think that's all I had.
All right. Daniel, you got anything else?
No. That's pretty much it.
All right. Well, that's it. I think that was a fantastic little... I think you both brought up some really great points, so I'll be interested to see what the listeners say out there.
Yeah, that was a great way to start off our second season here of COC Live. That was really good. Great back and forth, great points, really good insight too. Brought up some things that I'd forgotten completely about. You guys there?
Yeah. we're all still pondering.
I think everybody was deep in thought.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a huge echo, eh, Jeff? Are you catching that?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, that's one reason I was kind of halting and talking. I wasn't sure if I was talking over somebody. And I'd keep stopping, and then the echo would quit. And I'm like, I guess I'm not interrupting anybody. And go. So I was a little bit halting there.
I don't know. I think it might be coming from Daniel. He just paused himself, so it's gone away.
Is it me? I mean, because I haven't moved my mic once in the entire thing.
Oh, well. Mute yourself. That's better. Okay.
So next week, we're going to have Dan Brienne facing off against Gid. Against Infinite Speech?
Yeah.
Infinite Speech is the home team, so he gets to pick the environment. And we look forward to that. Gid missed out on season one of COC Live, and Dan is one of the most dedicated managers that we get. Last season, for those of you that weren't around, Dan actually broadcast one of his fights from Disney, from his hotel room in Disney. So that'll forever go down.
On vacation, yeah.
Yeah. So that'll forever go down as one of the most dedicated managers in the history of this game. I'm sure his wife didn't feel that way, but
she seemed to enjoy it. So
before we leave you tonight, though, we're going to introduce a new segment to our show. We've had a couple of new things on tonight. This is actually one of the ones that me and Jeff are looking the most forward to. So without further ado, welcome to the COC Power Rankings, where Jeff and myself take it upon ourselves to rank 5 new characters each week in terms of who we think is the toughest.
Power Rankings! I feel like that should be there.
Nice.
Power Rankings!
You actually kind of scared me a little when
you did
that. Yeah,
sorry.
Okay. If you'd like to submit a character to be ranked, or just want to tell us how stupid we are for all of our choices, feel free to log in at comicattackformer.com and tell us what you think in the COC thread labeled Power Rankings.
It's comicattack.former, just so people know.
What did I? Is it .former?
.former.com, yeah.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
My mistake.
Yeah, that's cool.
So tonight's nominees, I'll read the nominees, and then we'll let Jeff rank them, and then I'll rank them. The 5 people that we're going to start with, I thought I'd start kind of in the middle, some tough slugging kind of characters, but, you know, not top rung or anything. So in no particular order, they are Thing from the Fantastic Four, Warpath of recently of X-Force fame, Hulkling from the Young Avengers, Luke Cage, and Sebastian Shaw.
All right. Well, I'm going to start from the back end, the lowest power, and work my way up. So the first one's got to be Luke Cage. While Luke is extremely powerful, he's got the durable skin, he doesn't have a lot of power in terms of – he's not the strongest. He's also not the he can't project any energy or anything like that. So his power really is in his defense more than his offense. So he would be my number 5. Number 4 would be Warpath. Warpath for me, his power set has changed over the years a lot. But it's kind of hard to pin down. But I'd say he's a little bit stronger than Luke Cage, or maybe on tier with Luke Cage. But he's also got things like super speed. He's got his tracking abilities, and he's a hell of a hand-to-hand fighter. So I would put him just a little bit above Luke Cage. My third one, I would put the Thing. Now the Thing gets a lot of. I mean, he's the strong guy from the Fantastic Four. So, you know, you think that he would get a little bit more on the totem pole. And obviously he is in a huge power strength class. And, but that's really all he is just strength. He doesn't have any speed. He doesn't have any, he's not very smart. He's not very strategic. He doesn't really have any other powers other than being made of rock. He can't control that rock. He can't do anything with that rock. He's just kind of durable. But, like, faced against people like Wolverine, like, he's got his face carved up because the whole adamantium thing can – he's not resistant to that. So – while he is very durable because of his orange rock, he's not the most. So I would put Hulkling as the number 2 because Hulkling comes from 2 lineages of tremendous power. You've got the Skrull side from his mother's side, and then you've got the Captain Marvel side. And now Hulkling's power set is really incredible. And I would say the only thing that would deter him is because he's a teenager. He hasn't quite matured into all of his power set, so that's arguable. But I would say that because of his shape shifting abilities, he can fly. He can shift his organs to like when I think during the Young Avengers Runaways thing during Secret Invasion or Civil War or one of those. He basically moved his organs to the side so that people wouldn't get hurt. So to me, in a fight, he's pretty tough because he can do that kind of stuff. So I mean, you're thinking about the Thing and Hulkling and a fight between the two of them. I think they could actually go pretty toe to toe. He's got the super strength. He can create his mass and any because he's a shapeshifter. So, but my number one, I'll have to say, goes to Sebastian Shaw because, you know, the guy, no matter who he fights, the more he gets pounded on, the stronger he gets, and he absorbs that energy, and so it takes a tricky person to take him down. It really takes somebody like a telepath, like recently Emma Frost, kind of wiping his mind in Uncanny X-Men, and that's really the only way that he's going to be taken down. So, but other than that, I mean, the guy is just a powerhouse. He can just take out people left and right. So Luke Cage, Warpath, Thing, Hulkling, Sebastian Shaw, from weakest to strongest is my group.
Good, yeah. So my list is a little bit different than Jeff's. My number five and my number one are both the same as Jeff. So I think that Luke Cage, out of that group of five, Luke Cage is the fifth. He's the bottom rung. Like Jeff said, he's been shown with different power levels and things like that over the last, you know, I'd say 5-6 years. But basically, he's just kind of he's a pretty tough guy who's pretty strong. And they always use the unbreakable skin. I don't really know what that means exactly. So I rank him as my fifth. My fourth is actually completely almost opposite of Jeff's, where I put Hulkling as fourth. And I agree with everything that Jeff said about Hulkling, and he has a great power set and stuff. But as someone who's owns and has read every single one of his appearances, I find that Hulkling is one of those guys who is all about potential and doesn't necessarily ever really live up to that potential. The biggest thing that I've ever seen Hulkling do was when he changed his form so he looked like Yellow Jacket and snuck into the Tony Stark's secret compound and stuff and got all the codes during Civil War. In terms of actual fighting and beating people up and stuff like that, I find Teddy more often than not gets beat up or runs away.
Okay, so say in a fight with the Thing, he turns into Alicia Masterson. And Thing's like, oh, you know, Alicia, and then Hulkling like decks him. You think that can happen?
Well, yeah, maybe. But see, my thing is I think when it comes to the Thing and Hulkling, I think if the Hulkling even, in my consideration, if the Hulkling even tries to go toe to toe with the Thing's gonna knock his ass out. so I mostly see Hulkling as he's kind of a flea guy, you know, like. He grows some wings and he flies away, and do you know what I mean? His arm grows really far and he punches somebody from far. But they call him Hulkling, but you can't mistake the fact that he is not the Hulk and he doesn't have Hulk strength.
Hasn't he fought either Thing or the Hulk before and gotten beaten up?
Maybe the Hulk, but I don't know about the Thing.
During World War Hulk, actually I don't think he ever has. I don't think he's ever fought Hulk. Now Thing, I don't collect Fantastic Four, so I can't be certain about that. But like what I do know is that I've never really seen Hulkling fight anybody. And like I said, I own almost all of his appearances, unless there's some that I've missed out on. So I ranked Hulkling as the second last, as fourth on that of those five. My third was Warpath. I love Warpath. I think he doesn't get enough ink. I think he's one of my favorite characters in the Marvel Universe. He has limitations, I know that. But the one big thing that I wanted to bring up that Jeff didn't, that I think gives Warpath the edge over some of these guys, are his vibranium knives that he uses very consistent. Yeah. And you know, a lot like Jeff was saying that, you know, the adamantium can slice through things. Well, so can the vibranium. We've seen him pop both those things in Hulk's shoulders during World War Hulk. We've seen him open up Sentinels with one flick of the wrist with them and stuff like that. And I think that's kind of a deal breaker when it comes to Hulkling and Cage below him. I think that Warpath has the hand-to-hand fighting experience and those knives, and that would take down both of those guys. I put Thing above Warpath as second on this list because of his experience, his fighting experience, his overall strength, and his overall toughness. I think that with the exception of Sebastian Shaw, if any one of those other guys, Warpath, Hulkling, or Luke Cage, tried to go toe-to-toe with Thing, I think Thing knocks them out. Now, I know Brian Michael Bendis showed Luke Cage knocking Thing out a couple of issues ago of New Avengers, but Brian Michael Bendis has come right out and said last year that if he could have a relationship with any one Marvel character, it'd be Luke Cage. He has personally reinvented Luke Cage to be who he is now. So I don't think that's entirely credible. And then, like Jeff said, Sebastian Shaw, he's one of those awesome characters. Too bad he wasn't shown as an awesome character in the movie in X-Men First Class. I think they made him into a bit of a joke, but the character in the comics, I think he's almost unstoppable. I don't know how you beat Sebastian Shaw unless you can, you know, remove gravity from the guy and have him float suspended in the air and just not hit him with anything and leave him there or something. Cause, you know, the second you touch him, he's as strong as you are. So for me, it was Sebastian Shaw is the toughest, Thing second, Warpath, Hulkling, and Luke Cage.
So I just saw on the forums that Dan and Billy both posted that that they liked Thing, Luke Cage, Warpath, Hulkling, and they put Sebastian Shaw at the end.
So read theirs again.
Thing, Luke Cage, Warpath, Hulkling, Sebastian Shaw. Yeah, there's no way. I mean, against any of these guys, Sebastian Shaw is going to cream them. So
yeah.
I think Hulkling could possibly beat him simply by tying him up, you know, by wrapping him up and holding him instead of trying to punch him. But it would be a matter of if Hulkling knew to do that. You know, usually Shaw wins by letting people hit him, and then he's powered up, and that's that.
Right.
But Shaw has been overloaded before too. I'm wondering if the Thing were just pummel him, how long Shaw could absorb the energy. You know, where's his upper limit?
Well, and, you remember that issue where Colossus did that, and Sebastian Shaw basically touched him, and it flew Colossus all the way back. Like, it just knocked Colossus on his ass. So.
Yeah. It's all a matter of when Shaw chooses to strike back, because he has been overloaded before and absorbed so much energy, he destabilized. I kind of agree. I generally agree with you guys' reasoning. I think you have about right, because you're right. Hulkling, it can be pretty powerful, but he tends to be either underwritten or just shown to be too naive yet to fully use his powers.
Right.
Daniel, what do you think?
Well, are you talking about an emptied Shaw?
Well, no. I mean, you're talking about whether or not he has the power to take out these other guys.
All of them, but Hulkling and Warpath, I think. Warpath, he could. He doesn't need to just punch people, like Tom brought up, or Ian brought up. He has the knives. He's a very skilled knife combat. If he gets up on him, what happens then?
Yeah, exactly. Warpath can cut him, and given those vibranium knives, I'm sure that they could cut through his skin and not serve, just power him up further. Whereas an ordinary knife would probably snap off, but the vibranium knives would penetrate, I'm sure.
Those knives have penetrated like the best space stations. He's taken down Strife. With those knives too.
Yeah.
I mean, Warpath is underrated, but overrated in terms of strength, but underrated in terms of his actual combat prowess.
Good point.
Well, what would you guys, Tom and Daniel, what would y'all rank these guys at?
Luke's at the bottom to me.
Luke.
Yeah, I think so. Luke would be, say, toe-to-toe with the thing. I would think Luke would have internal injuries. He's got the indestructible skin, but I'm not sure how deep that goes. And he could basically end up just being a sack of indestructible skin and jelly after going up against the thing long enough. I think Hulkling, yeah, I would probably go with, my last one would probably be Luke Cage. And then maybe Hulkling, Warpath, and then between Thing and Sebastian Shaw, I think Shaw would come out on top. So I go with Shaw, Thing, Warpath, Hulkling, and then Luke Cage.
Daniel, how about you, man?
I go Luke at the bottom, and then numbers 2 through 4 are all based on like what the event is or the environment. It would be probably Thing. But, I mean, he's seen so much that I honestly think there isn't a strong man out there that's seen as much as he's seen.
True.
And then Warpath, Hulkling, and then Sebastian Shaw to top it off.
Right. And something you said, Jeff, you said that Thing was not that smart. It's true he's kind of a rough exterior, but he is, I think as Ian said, is a very, very seasoned combat veteran. He knows... he knows how to fight, and he's not as dumb as people make him out to be.
Well, I don't think he's dumb, but I think that he doesn't have the, I don't think he has the prowess that even somebody like Warpath has. I mean, I think Warpath could out-strategize him, but I think the Thing has him in terms of just pure strength. So, but yeah.
Yeah, Warpath, yeah, you're right. Warpath would be able to penetrate his rock hide and possibly injure him badly enough that he could come out on top. But as Daniel says, a lot of this is situational. In a confined space where Warpath wouldn't be able to dodge too well, then like if they were fighting, say, in we've had battles before where they're in like a prison cell and in something like that, I think Thing would be able to pummel him before he got cut up too badly. Whereas in a more open environment, say in a forested environment, I think Warpath would probably come out on top because he could take off for the trees and come in from different angles.
Right.
And basically, as you said, Thing's not that agile and not that flexible. So it'd be pretty easy for Warpath to circle around and hit him from the back and a few stabs and, it's to some critical spots, like in the base of his spine, and that's that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or base of his neck. And,
well, and Thing has never really gotten his due in the COC. Like, he always gets taken out pretty easily. I don't know why. I don't know if he's just not one of – or he's just not a favorite character or what. But, maybe that's part of it that's playing in my mind as well. So, anyway. Yeah.
I thought about drafting Warpath, and I was toying with the idea. I ended up not doing so, but he would have been a good one to bring into this game. I think he would have been formidable.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to our 21st episode of COC Live. And you can go to comicattack.former.com. Forumer, that's what that is, .com, and go to the COC thread in there to vote for who you think. There's a poll there for this episode, and you can vote for who you think is the most deserving win between Professor X and Venom. If you have any questions that you want to have answered on the show, please email them to us at jeff@comicattack.net or capekiller@yahoo.ca, or you can go to the thread that says Ask the COCers, and there are a few questions that are in the backlog for right now, which we'll get to in subsequent episodes. We would love to see millions of people arguing the fights in the forum, so feel free to post in the fight thread. We want to hear what you have to say. Your words, your ideas will definitely sway me and Ian, because we feed on what other people have to say. So please add your own rationale as to why Professor X or Venom could win. Also, look for us on Twitter at COC Comic Attack. And Facebook, you can search us at COC Podcast as well. We record every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so be sure to get your votes in before then. And after some top-notch, I should say, editing by myself, the fight is posted typically on Tuesdays. So so be sure to do that. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. That's always helpful, so do that. So
leave us a review on iTunes.
Yeah, leave us a review. Let us know what you think about the show. We'd love some feedback, so please do that. So so Tom and Daniel, thank you guys for kicking off the game this season, and both of you did a great job. So I want to thank you both for being here.
Thanks a lot. I'm looking forward to another season.
Awesome. And Ian, as always, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. So until next week, true believers, keep it geeky.
Let's get ready to...